This is episode 294 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers. And joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Holy crap, Brandon. Tons and tons and tons of crap to talk about today. Like, we probably shouldn't even waste an instant here.
It's going to be a full show.
Yeah, it's going to be a very full show.
Going to be talking about the draft, going to be talking about some moves by the Seahawks. There may even be news that happens during the show. We don't know. But let's kick things off. Before we get into the draft, we have some news, a couple big moves by the team this week. As the Seahawks cut a couple of veteran players, Justin Britt and DJ Fluker, cut from the team. And, these were two guys who I was prepared to have them compete for their job in the preseason. And I was a little bit surprised that they made the move right now.
Yeah, I thought we might talk about the draft before we talked about Fluke and Britt going, but I think them...
No, I'm throwing curveballs at you straight out of the gate.
Okay, that's cool. I think them getting Lewis in the third round, the guard from LSU, was unexpected. I don't think they actually thought they were going to get a guy of that caliber in this draft, especially at that point.
Yeah.
And so the idea that, it's not like they were going to cut Fluker before the draft because they figured he was probably going to be their guy. And then all of a sudden, I found this young guy who we think can be on the same level. Then they end up cutting Fluker. As far as the Britt cut, I'm still not super stoked about that. I get it. You're kind of clearing the decks, right? Or in this case, robbing from Peter to pay Paul, right? To get that defensive lineman, to get that edge rusher. The only thing, though, is that all we've done is rob Peter.
we haven't given it to anybody yet.
We haven't given it to anybody. And it doesn't sound like Clowney's going to be back. So it makes you really wonder what they're doing with this extra cap space. And so that has its own aspect, right? The idea that this money probably is going to go to the defensive line, at least I hope so. But the other aspect of these cuts that I find interesting is we heard so much about this want to have continuity on the offensive line. Well, goodbye to that.
Right. Yeah. And that's my biggest problem with these two moves is that now you're going into next season and the Seahawks did sign Mike Iupati. Dwayne Brown is coming back, but that's two guys now. Two guys in terms of continuity. And I guess you can make the argument, well, if Ethan Posick is competing for a center spot, and if Joey Hunt is competing for a center spot, there's continuity there. You have some guys like, I know they're bringing back Jordan Simmons, but if you have Jamarco Jones competing for a left guard spot, but the Seahawks were all set just a week ago. They had Brown coming back. They had Iupati coming back. They had Britt and they had Fluker. And so they just had Brandon Schell or whoever's going to play the right tackle spot to worry about. They had continuity on the offensive line. And the reason why this concerns me is that you don't know what kind of offseason program you're going to have for these guys to get together and work things out. You don't know if you're going to have much of a preseason. So I liked the idea of having continuity on the offensive line, and now they're not going to have that.
Yeah, then you got to decide, well, is that worth bringing in, say, two more pass rushers? And a lot of that has to do with how you feel about the guys that they drafted, right?
Yeah.
Especially the edge players, which they're interesting prospects in and of themselves. But I don't know, man. It's a tough pill to swallow. I did find it interesting how much more love that not only the fans, but the organization showed Fluker on his way out the door than they did Britt.
Well, Fluker showed some love just on his way out the door himself, posting a message for everyone to see. And I think it really got fans behind DJ Fluker, maybe even more so now than when he was on the team.
Hi to us, I'm DJ Fluker. I appreciate you all have heard the news. I want to thank John and Pete for showing me much respect during this time. I want to thank my family and my team for supporting me, and best believe to us, I definitely see you around.
I saw some people after they heard that message from Fluker that he was their favorite player now. And I'm like, where have you guys been? DJ Fluker's been awesome all this time.
Yeah, remember my impassioned defense of keeping DJ Fluker not but a few episodes ago?
Yeah.
I mean, definitely one of those character guys that I loved having on the team and everybody seemed to rally around. the thing that should be the most concerning for Seahawks fans is that when he was cut, he was unemployed for how many minutes?
Not long at all. Yeah, the Ravens like snatched 12? Him right up real quick.
Yeah. So that tells you something about his ability to play, to still play. I mean, he's only 29.
Yeah.
As a guard. And I get it. They decided to go younger.
Yeah, you couldn't have traded a guy like, well, and maybe they just wanted to, you know, out of respect for him, allow him to pick the team that he wanted to go to. But it seems like you could have maybe gotten him for a little trade if he's picked up that quickly.
I would have felt like you could have got at least a six for Fluker.
Sure.
Somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But as far as trading Britt, I'm not sure you would have gotten anything from him just because injury,
right?
Offseason, nobody can look at him, and also the cap hit. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, well, do you believe in Russell Wilson's ability to cover up the sins of the offensive line? If you do, then maybe this is the way that you would go about trying to fill out the rest of the roster, you know, meaning exactly the defensive edge and even defensive interior.
Well, the other part that you were getting at with regard to the defensive line and the pass rush was that they haven't gone out to get anybody and they made those moves. And you're thinking, okay, anytime now they're going to go ahead and announce that either Clowney's coming back or maybe they've signed Everson Griffin or another veteran. But instead, the message that we get on Wednesday is that Jaron Reed is taking number 90 back, which is a pretty good signal that maybe Clowney is just out of the picture now at this point.
I'm not one to really read into a lot of those things on the usual, uh-huh. Right? This is one where I'm like, oh, geez, okay. Well, Clowney paid a lot for that number last year, and now it's gone. You think if he comes back, he's paying Reed again for it? I don't think so. But it does seem to, you know, kind of put that out there that they're not expecting Clowney back at all. And I think they're kind of tired of the shenanigans, to be honest. So you want to play for us or not?
Yeah.
Okay, no. Fine. Let's go do something else.
Yeah.
And
if we don't hear from you by this time, Jaron Reed's going to get his number. He's going to take his number back.
Right. And I think I'd be a little shocked if you don't see something in the next week or so. Right? Even with these remaining free agents? Or maybe not, just because you can't get him in for physicals? Is that the big problem here?
Maybe. Is that the hold up? Put it off. I can't imagine that they're happy with drafting a guy in the second and in the fifth and saying, okay, problem solved on the defensive line. Let's move on.
Yeah, especially, I mean, right now your problem solved is LJ Collier will be good next year. These two rookies will be fine. Rasheem Green will improve. Bruce and Benson will be difference makers. And now we have a better pass rush.
Yeah, and Jaron Reed will be better from last year.
Right. I don't know that I'm banking on that.
There's a lot of hoping within that plan.
Right. Without any proven commodities. And I don't think that that's the way they're going to roll, because one of the things about this draft is it kind of pointed to the idea that they're in win now mode.
Well, I'm curious to hear from you then why you get that impression that just based on how the draft went, that they are in win mode right now, because I feel like they should be, but I don't know if I necessarily got that impression just based on the particular draft picks.
Yeah, okay. There's some definite things about the draft there that kind of point to that for me. And mainly, like, most of these guys are more polished guys, more four-year players, guys that aren't like, oh, he's got to put on a bunch of muscle to play in the league. Not like, this is a real developmental pick, short of their first pick. Everybody else seemed to be like a guy that they kind of look at and go, oh, they could come in and they could do this and this right away. And to me, that's what kind of pointed to that.
Well, let's go ahead and run down the draft, and let's start off with what one of the things we always like to do. The Seahawks put out the draft calls of the players as John Schneider's giving them a call, and you get an idea for the type of guy they are. You get to hear their reaction at them becoming an NFL drafted player. And we have a few of those. I think we have 4 out of the 8 Seahawks picks, but we do have the first round pick. And Jordan Brooks, the linebacker from Texas Tech, was the first one taken by the Seahawks off the board. They stay put at number 27, the first time they've stayed put in the first round since 2011, back when they took James Carpenter, and there was some reasoning for that. But let's hear General Manager John Schneider giving Jordan Brooks a call.
Hello?
Hey, is this Jordan?
Yes, sir.
Is this? Hey, Jordan, this is John Schneider. I'm the General Manager of the Seattle Seahawks.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Hey, did you say Bobby Wagner was a guy you looked up to in your interview?
Oh, yeah.
Are you cool if we select you? If we select you right here at 27?
I'm more than cool with it.
Dude, we're really excited, man. Bring that toughness and that grit and all that speed, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Congratulations to you and your family, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And be safe and look forward to seeing you soon. I'll give you a call a little bit later. Coach Carroll will be giving you a call, and the defensive coaches will call you after that, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Oh, man. So excited for you. And we're really excited for the Seattle Seahawks, too, bud.
I can't wait, man. I can't wait.
All right. Let's let it rip, buddy.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Enjoy your time with your family.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
First thing about every one of these calls and every one of these draft picks, as we go through and we talk about them all, I like the dude.
Oh, yeah.
Every one of these guys. The dude, right?
Well, and that's one of the things that I think that we also need to keep in mind that, you know, a lot of times going into a draft, you're looking at a guy just based on his play on the field, right? And that's how all these guys get ranked in terms of draft analysts. But when you consider the team and trying to build a culture, they're looking at, will this dude fit in with this other group of dudes and will they all get along well?
Right. Definitely an important part of things. Also, just the mental makeup to persevere and get better in the NFL, because it's not a cakewalk coming from college to the NFL.
No, it's a full-time job, as it turns
out. It is. And so every one of these draft picks has some of that grit that they've always talked about and looking for. And I think that's great. So with that said about every one of these guys, let's talk about each one of these picks specifically, and starting with Brooks. In the moment, that might have been one of the bigger head scratchers I could come across, right?
Every single year with the first pick, I feel like.
But you talk about the way that John Schneider sees things in tiers, right? And the thing is that they didn't want to stay at 27. They were trying like hell to get out of 27, but Green Bay got a better deal, and so they didn't get to trade down.
Right.
So, well, now you're picking. So out of the guys that are left, now you look at those tiers of players. Now, I think one of the things you notice about the draft is they drafted for need from second round on, but with their first pick, and this is something they've done traditionally, they're going to choose the best guy on their board. Because, you know, as you get into the third round or so, like, the talent all is kind of about the same as far as the physical attributes, for the most part, right? I mean, we're talking in platitudes here. But as far as the elite athletes and that sort of thing, those are your first round, early second round guys. And out of all those dudes on the board, he looked at, he goes, well, the guy that has those traits that are rare that you can't just coach up is Jordan Brooks. And he happens to play linebacker. I didn't want a linebacker as a first pick. That's for sure. I mean, I felt fairly set there, and it didn't sit well with me that first night. But upon thinking about it, it made a little more sense to me. And I don't know how you felt.
Well, I was kind of the same way in the moment, but maybe I analyzed it after the fact a little bit differently. I thought that maybe I didn't recognize linebacker as being as high of a need as the Seahawks did. And I think now going back, Dustin Mock sent in a note after the draft and said, you know, his biggest issue that we had in the draft to improve our defense, one, pass rush, obviously. I think that was everybody's number one.
Yep.
His number two was linebackers getting picked on in coverage. And if you go back to last season and you look at some of the statistics, it really did. I mean, Bobby Wagner got picked on in coverage. KJ Wright got picked on in coverage. A big part of that, too, was the fact that, you know, they had three linebackers on the field more than any other team by far. Mm-hmm. And whether or not they are going to continue to do that or not is a question. But Dustin points out Bobby Wagner gave up nearly 700 yards in coverage, 112 passer rating, three touchdowns. KJ gave up 725 yards, a 94 passer rating, and five touchdowns. Michael Kendricks gave up 426 yards, a 108 passer rating, and two touchdowns. And that was just on 283 coverage snaps. So if you equate that to it ends up working out to a similar number as Bobby Wagner. So as Dustin points out here, he says, I'm not trying to crap on our linebacker core for giving up half the surrendered passing yards. They shouldn't be in coverage as often dealing with receivers. They're linebackers. I think playing that much 4-3 can work if you have a monster safety playing, but right now we don't. After drafting Barton and Ben Burkervin last year, have Wagner and KJ on the roster, don't know what's going to happen with Kendricks. Grabbing another pure inside linebacker that high looks to me like they're leaning toward 4-3, maybe even harder. So it's interesting because, you know, Dustin Mock sees this as maybe a potential schematic change for the Seahawks. And John Schneider did in one of his post-draft press conferences talk about how they needed to improve pass rush, whether it was through players, through scheme, or through coaching. And so it's interesting that Dustin's picking up on that. I don't think that going into this draft that I understood the need, I think, for linebacker. And looking back on it, I can see how they got tore up by teams like San Francisco, by teams like the Rams, and to where having speed at the linebacker position, I could see that being really important to them now.
Okay. The last part of what you said there was really what rang true to me. As far as Dustin's point regarding the linebackers giving up a lot in pass coverage, well, a couple things there. One, they're not playing enough nickel. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
Other part of the problem is when you don't have a pass rush, I don't care who's in coverage, whether it's your DBs or your linebackers, especially your linebackers, you're going to get toasted. Like, that's the way it is. I mean, you can't expect a linebacker to cover for 3 seconds,
no.
4 seconds. For a second, maybe two, sure. So I think pass rush really affected their coverage grade more so than their ability. Now, as far as you talking about the speed at linebacker, mm-hmm. that was something that we talked about throughout the season a couple times. Niners gashed us outside. Rams gashed us outside in the run game.
Right.
Okay. Not the pass game, in the run game. We definitely needed to get faster at linebacker. Now, as far as Brooks being a pure inside linebacker, absolutely false. He played outside his previous 2 years before last year.
Right.
He's anything but a pure inside linebacker. And Samuel Gold actually did an excellent breakdown on YouTube, if you guys want to go and check it out, about his potential in pass coverage and some of the things that he does well in pass coverage. He's actually a decent man defender. A piss poor zone defender,
right?
But a decent man defender. So there's potential there. Also, one of the things I didn't realize was how many pressures he had throughout the season this last year as a blitzer. He's an excellent blitzer.
He has a certain kind of vision that is pretty unique, I think, for
vision and explosion.
Yes, yes.
Because when he sees it, he goes, and he is so fast. I think he's a guy that can come in and play the Michael Kendricks position, a 1-2 down kind of linebacker. It's going to help. I don't know that. I mean, it's not that game changing defensive end, but that guy wasn't on the board anymore either. So I don't know what else they were supposed to do. And then they tried to attack the deficiency of edge with their next pick by trading up and kind of getting what they felt was the best of that next tier of guys.
Yeah. And a guy that it sounded like John Schneider was thinking had a pretty tough decision to make with regard to that 27th overall pick of whether or not he was going to take Daryl Taylor, who they traded up in the second round for, or Jordan Brooks, who is the guy that they ultimately took. And it would have been interesting to see how everything fell had the moves not happened, you know, with the Green Bay Packers moving up with the Dolphins rather than the Seahawks. It sounded like that trade was in place. And just with the fact that it came at the last minute, then there was nobody else. There was no other quarterback really on the board that anybody was willing to trade up for.
Sure.
So I don't think that the Seahawks really would have got a whole lot of value trading out of that spot as it was. The interesting question to me is the idea that Brooks was the third linebacker off the board. Isaiah Simmons went number 8 overall to the Arizona Cardinals. Not happy about that for me, with him being one of my draft crushy type players going in, and watching him go to the Cardinals isn't fun. But then Kenneth Murray of Oklahoma, he goes off the board ahead of Brooks. And Patrick Queen was a guy who came off right after Brooks going mm-hmm. to the Baltimore Ravens. And the Ravens, everybody was projecting the Ravens to take a linebacker of some sort, whether it was mm-hmm. Murray, whether it was Queen. And I even saw a CBS mock draft where they had Brooks going to the Ravens, interestingly enough. And it was the only one out there that had Brooks in the first round that I could find, but that was out there. And so he was on the radar for NFL teams in need of a linebacker. And when I went back and looked at Patrick Queen, looked at Kenneth Murray, and looked at Jordan Brooks, I don't know if there's really that much difference. In fact, maybe it's the bias after going back and look, but I like Brooks better than the other two guys.
Right. Yeah. No, and it's a difficult position to really evaluate, especially if you didn't play it, right?
Right.
And it just depends on what kind of flavor you're looking for in a linebacker. They could have gone with Queen, and that would have been fine. They went with Brooks. I do trust them when it comes to linebacker evaluations. They've done a damn good job over the course of, you know, the John Schneider regime here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll trust the pick. I'll trust the pick. And I do think it helps on defense. And I mean, we went into this draft saying, do we need more help on offense or defense? And we've all agreed it's defense. That's where they went early and often. And I can't say that I'm sad about that.
With the first two picks, they go defense, and the second pick that they made was trading up, as we mentioned, to get Daryl Taylor, the pass rusher out of Tennessee, and here was his call with John Schneider.
Hello?
Hey, Daryl.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's John Schneider with the Seattle Seahawks. We're on the clock right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the short, pasty white guy that you had lunch with.
Yeah, I remember.
Okay, buddy. Hey, we're going to select you right here, man, make you a Seahawk, okay?
Okay.
Come in here and kick some ass, man. Get after that quarterback, all right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Congratulations, yes, my man.
Thank you.
And heads up, because Coach Carroll's going to be calling you here in a quick second, okay?
Okay.
Hey, congratulations, man.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Now, whether or not you like the pick, you don't like the pick, what they did here is something that has worked out for them pretty well in past drafts, trading up for DK Metcalf, trading up for Tyler Lockett. When they've traded up four guys in the second or third round, and I guess Cody Barton they traded up for in the third round, but he had some starting time last year. But when you look at some of those other guys, second, third round players that they've traded up for, they've turned out to be have a pretty big impact on the team.
Absolutely.
Jaren Reed, another one of those guys in the second round.
There you go. There's no denying that track record. Absolutely not. And Daryl Taylor could very much be that guy. He could also very much not be that guy.
Sure.
Out of every one of these draft picks, after watching a bunch of this guy's games, I mean, I probably watched 7 or 8 of his games over the course of 18 and 19, 2018, 2019. I don't know what to make of it. Yeah, I really don't.
Yeah.
In 2018, I saw some flashes in just sheer dominance. Against Georgia, which is a big-time program.
Yeah, Isaiah Wilson drafted in the first round. You saw him going one-on-one with him multiple times, a guy that had 80 to 90 pounds on him.
Yeah, and then I see him dominate Kentucky, right?
Yeah.
Now, Kentucky, not a big-time program, so you're like, eh. But you see some of those big-time flashes, right, in 2018. And then I look at his 2019 stuff, and I couldn't think but if there was somebody else in his uniform. Like, there were two different dudes. Now, I understand he had the shin injury, but does a shin injury make it so that when the ball snapped, you're the very last person to get off the ball as your defensive lineman? Watch the BYU tape. Like, that was the first game I turned on of this guy, and I was like, what in the hell is this? The ball is snapped. Everybody is off the line, all of his teammates. And he's like a half a beat late on every snap. The effort was piss poor. A play would go away from him and he just stopped running. Like, there was so much of that that showed up on his film, especially in 2019, that I was like, who did they just trade up for? Then I started watching some of the 2018 stuff, a little more encouraging. I don't know, man. This is a very perplexing pick to me.
And I was kind of curious to know when that stress fracture in his shin actually happened. And apparently he played all 13 games last year with that stress fracture. So if they're looking for a guy who's willing to play through an injury, they found a guy. And probably, you know, if a lot of people were projecting Taylor to be in the first round type of player after his 2018 season. And
yeah,
he played all over the field. He played stand up linebacker. He was lined up against tight ends on the outside. So he wasn't just rushing the passer. He was all over the field and had some pretty good speed. Yeah. You mentioned that Georgia game where he had two forced fumbles with the quarterback. He had another big sack and going up against an NFL caliber talent. So this one to me, again, I am hopeful that his play throughout 19 was just indicative of that injury and not, you know, an effort type issue. And I've never played through a stress fracture on my shin though, and how that would affect me.
Yeah,
I would probably sit it out, and that was one of the things that John Schneider pointed out. This dude could have shut it down last year and said, "No thanks, I'm done," but he played through it.
And if that is the case, in terms of that is the really defining factor between his 2018 and 2019 season, then there's a lot of reason for optimism here. I mean, he really did have flashes. And look, I mean, the Seahawks picked a linebacker with the last name Brooks and a DN with the last name Taylor with their first two picks. I like the sound of that. That's for sure.
Yeah, those are some pretty famous names when you look at the history of Hall of Famers. It's kind of overall a lot of generic last name dudes.
Yeah, for reals.
Brooks, Taylor, Lewis, Robinson, Sullivan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good five out of the eight were just plain generic last names.
Yeah. Yeah. Colby the disease Parkinson.
Yeah. Swain is the most non-boring of all the last names.
It has the most swagger to it.
Swainer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Daryl Taylor pick, I could see it being. I could see it end up working out well for them. I also wonder if they couldn't have stayed put and not given up that pick at the end of the third round and then not had to move back. And I just, if they would have had four picks in the top 100 instead of three now, the way it worked out, you know, what other players could they have gotten? Denzel Mims ended up going to the Jets with that original round two pick. And I just think for them to not come out of this draft with a receiver in those first four rounds to where you could have gotten an impact guy or even taken a running back who you look at as an impact guy on the offense. That was something that I was maybe looking forward to that I was disappointed by.
Yeah, I guess I've always been on the other side of the wide receiver argument here. I don't see the pressing need to draft a big time wide receiver now.
Yeah. And it wasn't a need. It was more just it was a want.
I guess I just, spending draft capital on your third, fourth receiver when you've got tight ends coming out the wazoo and Lockett and Metcalf. Like, I don't care. I don't care. I'm not freaking out about it. Thing is, I think they actually addressed that wide receiver position a little bit, and we'll talk about that here in a bit. But then they finally do take their first offensive pick and guard Damian Lewis.
Hello.
Hey, this is Damian.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Damian, it's John Schneider. I'm the general manager for the Seattle Seahawks, bud.
What's up, Coach?
How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. How's Uncle Bus doing? Bus Cook? He represents you?
Yes, sir. He doing good.
Good. Hey, man, come on. We're going to select you right here, okay?
Yes, sir.
Come on up and be a Seattle Seahawk, all right, buddy?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Coach.
Hey, man, we're super excited, okay, to have you protect our quarterback, man, all right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. We got the best in the league. Come on up and protect him, okay, buddy?
Yes, sir. I'm ready, Coach.
Okay. Nate, what's going to happen is Coach Carroll's going to be giving you a call here in a minute, too, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right, bud. Hey, congratulations.
Thank you, Coach.
Okay. Take care.
Yeah. John Schneider now, Coach. So that's cool.
It's funny, though, because apparently this is a theme, particularly with LSU guys. Maybe LSU guys are trained up to call everybody Coach. I want to come back and talk about Lewis, but I have the other call from Stephon Sullivan of LSU, who was taken in the seventh round.
I heard this was the gem of all the calls. Are you really, you want to do it now?
I kind of want to break it out now.
Okay.
Should we save it?
I don't know. I haven't heard it. I just heard, I did not listen to any of these on purpose because I know how much you love them. And I wanted to have a fresh reaction for you on the show.
Okay, because I do have a lot of thoughts about Lewis. And I don't have a whole lot of thoughts about Sullivan, but I freaking love this phone call.
Okay.
Hello?
Stephon.
Yes, sir.
Hey, it's John Schneider with the Seattle Seahawks, man.
How you doing?
Good. We're getting ready to select you right here, bud.
Man, Coach, don't play with me, Coach.
No, I am. I'm the GM for the Hawks. You're going to come be with the Hawks, okay?
Don't play with me, Coach.
Go ahead,
Coach,
Matt,
don't play with me, Coach. Coach, don't do it to me, Coach. Please. Please don't play with me, Coach.
What's that?
You playing?
No. We're selecting you right here, buddy.
Turn it in, Matt. Turn it in, Matt.
We got you, dog. You're coming to Seattle. Yeah, buddy.
Oh, let's get to work, Coach.
Let's get to work,
let's get
buddy.
To work.
All
let's
right.
Get to work.
Hey, everybody's fired up for you.
Woo! Let's go. Let's get to work.
We're fired up for you, buddy.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's get to work, Coach.
I'll see you.
Hey, put my name up there.
They're gonna put it up. Hey, Coach Carroll's gonna give you a call in a couple minutes. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right, bud.
John Schneider has been called coach by both these LSU guys now.
Well, you got to imagine that. I believe most of the coaches do the calls, don't they? Not the GMs?
It could be. I don't know.
And not only that, I mean, your head's in 1,000 places when you're getting drafted. I mean, how often in college do you talk to a front office guy?
Yeah, somebody who's not a coach.
Never, because the coach is the GM.
Right.
And so when somebody says, I'm the GM, I mean, to them, that might as well mean coach.
Sure, yeah.
I get it.
I love that call, though. That guy who's ready to get to work. And the reason why I love it is that Stephon Sullivan was drafted at number 251 overall. Mm-hmm. And there's, what, 254, 255 guys?
Get down to the nitty-gritty.
Down to the nitty-gritty. And there's a lot of people who make the case that, oh, if you're one of these last few guys taken, you're going to be upset to go in the final four or five picks, because then you don't get to decide. One of the things about making it through the draft and being an undrafted free agent is that now you get to pick what city you might want to live in if there's a few different teams that are calling you and where you want to make that decision to go to. Not for Stephon Sullivan. He was fired up to get drafted.
Yeah. Well, number one, to get drafted. And then you heard him say, Seattle? like as in, oh my God, yeah. Yes, for sure. Yes, please, let me go there.
So very cool with Sullivan, and they do, although he has the tight end as his position at LSU, they ultimately drafted him to be a wide receiver, it sounded like. But, and maybe this was where you were thinking addressing the wide receiver position, but
nope.
Well, we can move on from that. One of the things, though, that came out in the press conference was just how much input that LSU's coach, Ed Orgeron, had with Pete Carroll. And it makes a lot of sense considering that the two of them coached the USC national championship teams in 2003, 2004. So definitely a good pipeline for information there from LSU type guys. And that's kind of what has me most fired up about this Damian Lewis pick, the guard from LSU, because Lewis ended up being the first guard taken off the draft board in the third round. And how many times have the Seahawks drafted just a straight dude at guard? It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
Especially this high.
Yeah, I've definitely begged for such things, right?
Right.
And a guy that really does have the type of game that fits well with what we want to do. A road grader type guy. Basically a younger DJ Fluker. I mean, it's really who you're getting there. And they're obviously high enough on him to get rid of Fluke, create that cap space, and hopefully bring in another edge guy. I'm fired up about it. I mean, I saw one of the guys, that Strong Opinion Sports guy, Zach, I think is his name, on YouTube. He's like, they didn't draft an offensive lineman again. I don't get it. Da, da, da. Like, you know, he's just talking about after the first round.
Oh.
It's like, hey, well, they ended up with one of the best guards.
Sure.
From the draft. I mean, that is something there. And it's exciting. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm happy that as I look at this, and just what they've done throughout the offseason, what have they focused on? Offensive line, defensive line. Thank you. That's all I asked for.
Yeah.
It may not be the exact way I would have gone about it, but thank you for putting the time and resources there. They did that with Damian Lewis. I hope that he is just a rock solid guy there for the next 5 years. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, a guy who can come in and be an immediate impact type player and the type of guy that they look for on the offensive line. It, again, with this offseason being the way that it might go, it does give me a little bit of concern. If it were a normal offseason, I'd probably be a lot more fired up about this pick based on his game and having a full offseason to train up and be part of the offensive line and be, you know, plug and play guy going in week one. maybe that's the type of inside information that they have here based on the type of play that he has. And, you know, he's gone up against, you know, he was a guy in the Senior Bowl who went one-on-one with other NFL caliber guys and was really impressive at the Senior Bowl. So I'm optimistic, and I feel like that's how I've been coming away with these first three picks.
Well, that's one of the things that Corbin Smith from Seahawks Maven has made a big, big, big deal about, was that all these guys were so pro ready because of Corona, right? Like that's why they drafted all these guys, is because of the offseason and all that. And I honestly disagree. I think they drafted all these guys that are as close to NFL ready as a rookie can be because their quarterback is in the prime of his career. It is go now time. It is go now time.
Yeah, you don't want to be developing a whole lot of guys. And that was part of one of the reasons why, too, I didn't mind the trade-ups necessarily, too, because if you're looking for guys who can come in and be an impact right away, I would rather have three guys who you feel that way about than have four guys that you feel so-so about.
Yeah, I'd rather have three guys that you give an 85% chance of all of them being an impact player than seven guys where, you know, there's a 40% chance that any one of them could become an impact player. I mean, it's not like we're not the Dolphins. We don't need everything.
No.
So let's go and try to get as quality a guy that you can early on. If it means trading up a little bit, that's great. And it's a refreshing change, by the way.
Yeah. Staying put in round one, trading up in round two. And they moved back in round three a little bit, probably had just a number of guys they could have taken, which allowed them to move back and still get any number of guys with that number 69 pick. So I don't have a problem with that. They ended up trading with the Carolina Panthers, and they get another pass rusher out of the deal by picking Alton Robinson early on in the fifth round. Let's go.
You're going all over the place, man. We were trying a third. We're trying to go. Then you go to the seventh because you just want to play a call. Can we just go in order, man?
I don't have any more calls. Let's go in order. Because there's a few offensive guys here that were all kind of grouped together. After the Damian Lewis pick in the fourth round, they take tight end Colby Parkinson out of Stanford. And again, much like with the offensive line, you go, okay, well, they've got 18 dudes on the offensive line. Are they really... Although they could have drafted a tackle, and I would have been okay with that, too. I kind of expected a tackle more than a guard. But you got four tight ends, and we joked about how there is maybe a lack of maturity in the tight end room. And maybe Colby Parkinson, being a Stanford guy, can come in and add some maturity to that group.
Well, hopefully. He has the same hair as Luke Wilson, so hopefully his maturity is a little higher.
He's got some outstanding hair. His hair is better than Luke Wilson, I think. More body.
Yeah. So I watched some Colby Parkinson, and I came away with it just,
yeah.
I mean, it's cool. He can box a dude out in the end zone, and he can catch back shoulder fades. That's it. And he's not a blocker.
If you're having him play that Jimmy Graham role without...
Why? Why are we doing anything in a Jimmy Graham role again?
Well, he worked out in terms of offensive production. It was just that he couldn't block, and that maybe the salary issue was...
Right.
More
it didn't fit. It didn't fit with our scheme, ultimately. It didn't equate into high-level winning football. Sure, he got his numbers, Jimmy did. That's fine.
Yeah.
But that doesn't... I don't want Shoddy to have another freaking excuse to throw another back shoulder or fade or any of that crap in the end zone rather than just handing it to a big-ass running back and pounding it down your throat.
Yeah, the fade is not something that I know we're big fans of. So if Colby Parkinson had wide receiver as his position rather than tight end, would you have all that much more of an issue about it?
No, he's slow as hell. He can barely run. I have zero interest in a tight end that can't block. It's one dimensional. It tips your hand.
Yeah. It's funny that this was, you know, a lot of people's favorite pick.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, in terms of scheme fit, maybe just not what the Seahawks look for. But 6'7", dude, 250 pounds.
Awesome.
I'm sure Luke Wilson's not that great of a blocker either.
I know.
So.
I know.
Watch out, Luke. I think this guy may be coming for your job. He's got your hair.
Fine.
He's got a couple inches on you.
Yeah. And better shorts.
I mean, depends on how you define better. I mean, probably longer.
Not like a gigolo from a 70s movie.
Next up, DJ Dallas, running back out of Miami. and not a guy with a whole lot of production during his time in Miami, but fits a lot of those Seahawks type traits that Seattle looks for at running back. And I went back and watched some of this guy's tape, and he has that physical kind of running style that I think the Seahawks look for. And probably, considering all the other running backs who had come off the board early on, one of these new guys probably left that fits what Pete Carroll tends to look for in a running back.
Was Travis Homer a game changer?
Oh, no. I think this guy will be more
than
Travis Homer.
So why would his backup be a game changer? I don't know. I watched DJ Dallas' stuff.
Yeah.
And he's a slow version of, and not as powerful of Derrick Henry. He's not shifty at all. He doesn't really have any speed, and he's not particularly powerful. I mean, he'll take on a hit, but it's not like he's mowing dudes over. This was my least favorite pick
by
a lot. Yeah.
No,
I get we needed depth at running back. I get that.
I liked his Florida game. That was his most fun game to watch.
Yeah, the funny thing is that we ended up drafting another player from that game that's far more impressive.
See, now I feel like you're trying to goad me into jumping forward and skipping over Alton Robinson with their fifth round pick, 148 overall, the pass rusher out of Syracuse.
Yeah, he was interesting. I liked his get off a little better than Taylor's. Kind of a bigger dude, more in the Mike Bennett kind of frame, Rasheem Green.
Mm-hmm.
I think he can absolutely be a rotational depth guy right out of the gate. No doubt about it. I loved his effort. He had a good game against Clemson, and you know, Clemson being one of the big time schools right now. I thought this was one of their bigger steals of the draft.
For the team to find a rotational guy who can come in and give you that kind of, I mean, that's what you're looking for in the fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds and beyond.
Yeah. Yeah, if you can get that, you're doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what we look back at for the Seahawks over these past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years of Pete Carroll and John Schneider drafting, it's the misses in the third and fourth rounds that have been the biggest problem in terms of their drafts and providing depth to the team. Because if your guys in the third and fourth round aren't making the team and having any kind of role, I mean, Tedrick Thompson, how many times did we recognize him as a guy who probably shouldn't be out there, and they're still trucking him out there week after week?
Yeah, whether it's Amara Darbo, Tedrick Thompson, right? Like the third and fourth round hasn't been super kind to him, but they make up for it in the fifth and sixth somehow. And so it all buffs out. It'd be nice if they did a little better. I do think in the third round this year, they really nailed it with Lewis. I mean, look, and a lot of people be like, well, they drafted Russ in the third. Yeah, I know. But we're talking overall.
Well, and that's been 8 years. And yeah. and turned out that was the last time that the Seahawks got an F grade in the draft. And I see Roto World came through for us and gave Seattle an F for this class.
In the fantasy draft?
I don't know. Well, is Roto World a fantasy site?
It said fantasy draft. The link that you sent me, it just said fantasy draft at the bottom of it. And I was like, oh, you mean to tell me the fantasy guys didn't like the draft? Well, no shit.
Catfish! Yeah,
because we
funny.
Don't draft for fantasy points, okay?
I didn't take it as an article that was just basing their grade off of fantasy points, because, yeah, if you draft linebacker, edge, and guard, probably not going to have a whole lot of fantasy points out of those positions.
No.
But I'm jumping ahead now to draft grades, and we need to get to Freddie Swain, who was the sixth pick taken, 214 overall, wide receiver out of Florida.
Yeah, I really like Freddie Swain. Yep. I think he has a chance to beat out either Ursua or Dorsett for that slot guy.
Mm-hmm.
He played all over the place. They did all sorts of cool things with him. He just didn't have a quarterback.
Yeah.
Florida hasn't had a quarterback since before Tebow. I mean, Tebow wasn't even a quarterback, right?
Yeah.
So I actually really like Freddie Swain. He is very smooth. He runs good routes. He's got impressive speed. He has decent hands. Has fine size. I like that pick. I like his attitude too, man. This might be my like draft guy from this year. Like every year we have like the one guy that you're really kind of pulling for.
Yeah. Mine was Marquise Blair last year. That didn't work out too well for me.
Didn't work out awful.
No, I just didn't get to see him on the field very much.
Right. He got hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of excited about Freddie Swain.
Out of all the guys that I like the most, I think, out of this draft class, I think it's Damian Lewis for me.
Yeah, I totally get that. I totally get that.
But in terms of personality, too, Stephon Sullivan out of LSU, not just his draft call, just listening to his post-draft press conference, too, with the media, he just seems like a cool dude.
So I didn't look into his story because I figured you'd bring it up, but apparently he has a phenomenal story.
Yeah, I haven't gone all into his backstory yet.
Oh, that's usually your deal. See, I didn't do any of that on guys this year because I was leaving it for you.
Well, yeah. You know, the thing is with the draft, it got so much into a lot of these guys' stories anyway. So with the first three picks, I kind of knew about them. And now I haven't gone. I want to do individual episodes for each one of these guys where I really dig into the backstory and listen to their entire press conferences and do all that. So no, I haven't gotten into Sullivan yet, but I'm just excited just based on his presence in his press conference call.
I'm kind of with Bill Simmons actually about the draft coverage. He was talking about how somehow the draft has now turned into a Sunday feature piece on every dude, right? Like you'd open up the Sunday newspaper or just the front page is like some glowy feature of like, you know, your local pumpkin gardener or whatever it is. And that's how it is with every one of these dudes now. He's like, I wanted to hear some more football stuff. How do these guys fit in? When Jordan Love is selected, he's like, I want him to go full First Take. Get every dude up there. Like, what does this mean for Aaron Rodgers' future? I want to hear that for the next 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And instead, you know, you're hearing about, well, he stubbed his toe in the third grade. And then he, you know, like, who cares? Like, come on.
The draft come needed on. More balance in that regard. And, you know, we heard.
It was hard. It was hard this year. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. So I'm not going to bang on him too much. But
dude, they got through it without glitches. So, I mean, like anything major. Like they kept the coverage up on TV, and I think that was the biggest win for the NFL draft this year.
Heck yeah. Give him some credit. No doubt.
Well, we got a question in from Emmett Brown, came in, said, if the Hawks really wanted Brooks so bad, why did they want to trade back with Green Bay at number 30? Didn't they say Baltimore would have taken Brooks at number 28? I smell another panic/bust round one pick.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, they also took Queen at 28, so maybe they would have taken Queen, which more people had rated higher. I mean, there's a reason why the John didn't just take any deal to trade back.
Yeah.
He knew there's only so far he could go back and really risk losing Brooks and or Taylor.
And if you're at 27 and you're going back to 30 and you have Brooks, Queen, and Taylor all ranked pretty similarly on your board, then
right.
Maybe the draft picks that you're willing to take on outweighs the idea that you could miss out on your favorite of those three.
Right. And then you may still get a guy that you like. So
yeah.
Now this doesn't feel panicked. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people have killed us on our first round picks, you know, over the years, and it has been hit or miss. Just the amount of trading back, number one. And, you know, I saw a 1,000 memes of people saying something like John Schneider should just be like, you know, benched until round two. Like, just bring in another guy to do the first round for us.
I felt like we finally got it drilled into every analyst's head that John Schneider always trades out of that pick and then he ends up not doing it.
He
when
tried.
Everybody's expecting it. Yeah, he tried.
He tried, though.
He tried. He had it set up.
Yeah.
With Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty wild that they traded up for a quarterback. I did not expect
wasn't.
That.
That's not wild at all.
That's wild to me.
Everybody is losing their
catfish
over Jordan Love going to the Packers, and it makes all the sense in the world. Hey, Brandon, guess what? Aaron Rodgers is 35 freaking years old.
Yeah, and he gets hurt a lot.
He gets hurt all the time. And everybody forgets, because last year he was healthy, that he'd been broken the last two seasons before that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a passive-aggressive little
catfish
that, like, makes life hard on everybody. The new coach doesn't particularly care for him. And they're like, well, he's got 4 years left on his deal. Well, only two of those really matter. Guess how long Jordan Love needs before he should really start playing?
Yeah.
Two freaking years. So you let Aaron sit and sulk for 2 years. You train up Love. And you kick Aaron to the curb. And you trade him for something when he's 37.
Yeah.
And everybody's so perplexed to how they picked up Jordan Love. Like, what are you talking about? Makes all the sense. How many drafts coming up are you going to get a prospect with the ceiling? And I'm not saying it's a lock that Jordan Love is going to be good, but with the ceiling of Jordan Love, if you're picking towards the back half of the first round, how many opportunities are you going to get at that guy? Not many. Not many. So they took their swing when they could. Their board told him they were he was the best dude. I do not get the consternation over it.
I get the consternation in terms of the people who are infatuated with Aaron Rodgers.
I guess. Was he that good last year?
Well,
does he really fit LaFleur's offense?
He took him to the NFC Championship. The least they could do is throw Aaron Rodgers a bone and get him a receiver out of this draft class.
Their running game and defense really took them to the NFC Championship game, more so than Aaron Rodgers. Think about the game that the divisional round when we lost to them. How many great throws did Aaron make? Two?
Yeah.
It wasn't like Aaron Rodgers lit us up.
No, and I can see LaFleur probably just wanting to build his own team. He's his own dude. He's, you know, probably wants to shift more toward the run, going after Dylan as the running back there with their second pick. So,
and if you're LaFleur, you want a quarterback that's at least a decade younger than you, so they respect you rather than being the same age.
Yeah, and pushing you around like Rodgers has been doing.
God, yeah, I'd be sick of his crap too.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah.
I mean, you start to hear the whispers enough that and consistently enough.
Once is a coincidence, twice is a trend, three times is an Aaron Rodgers problem.
Right.
And you know what? He deserves it after the, you know, Favre-Rodgers transition, right? Not that he did anything wrong there.
Yeah.
It's just, it's the circle of football.
Now he gets to go through it too.
This is the way it needs to go. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it will be bullshit.
Catfish!
If the Packers get three legit franchise quarterbacks in a row.
Yeah, that's not right. I mean, yeah, even the Colts.
You have 45 years of franchise quarterbacks. It's a little bit of screw you.
I mean, they went through some tough times with Don Majkowski.
Sure. They started out with Bart Starr. Okay.
Yeah. But Packers fans, that was a hard time for them. Just the Don Majkowski years. He was okay.
Majkowski was fine for 2 years. It was all the dudes before Majkowski that they'll point to.
Yeah.
There was a stretch there, the 70s and, you know, mid 80s that were not favorable to the Packers. But cry me a river. You won the first championship. You've had Starr, Favre, and Rodgers in the history of your franchise. I don't want to hear anyone.
Packers fans need to they need to go through some growing pains. So hopefully this doesn't work out for Green Bay.
I'm very mixed on this because I had Jordan Love as a guy that I liked.
Yeah.
So I kind of want him to succeed. So I'm right. But I also would like to see the Packers fans get some comeuppance. So
it's a struggle.
It's a struggle.
It's and like me with Isaiah Simmons going to the Cardinals now.
Yeah, you have to root against that guy
now. I have to root against him. DeAndre Hopkins with the Cardinals now. They're collecting a lot of guys who I really like. And
yeah.
Although I did hear an interview with Isaiah Simmons, and he's a little bit diva-ish to me, which I didn't really know.
Yeah, there was some differing opponents on him for whatever reason. I didn't look a lot into him, so I don't have a lot of insight, but just kind of hearing people being, there's a lot of people that are kind of lukewarm about the guy. So who knows? Plus he's a Cardinal now, so we'll go to the desert and wither and die.
Hopefully he fails.
Yeah.
It's just my team rooting interest.
Yeah. How much do you think Cliff Kingsbury is going to get for his bond lair when he gets fired and sells it?
Well, it is in Arizona, so who wants to live there? He's probably going to take a hit.
I don't know. I mean, that place is absurd.
Yeah.
That's opulence to a level that just one does not need.
That was one of the interesting things about the draft is seeing inside so many coaches and general managers' homes. And he's the only one that I really got the impression of not really liking him. Like, I know Jerry Jones is rich and
he was on a freaking yacht. So right? that might be
like, I,
on the scale of one to the largest douchebag ever. Jerry Jones was closest to the top there, but I think Kingsbury was a close second, right?
Yeah, probably. And everybody else looked like they had, you know, normal rich people houses.
Yeah, the upper middle class, right?
Right.
Like, oh, that's the guest bedroom that they turned into draft headquarters for the, you know, and they did an okay job with it.
Yeah, John Schneider has columns in his dining room. Okay.
Right. Okay, I got you. But Kingsbury had a full-on Bond villain lair.
Right.
He's wearing those stupid slip-on, like, dress shoes and had him had his shoes on the table, like, propped up, and he's, like, kicked back on his couch with the two monitors.
It's way more relaxed than you should be during the draft.
He's just a douche, man. Him and McVay. Ugh. McVay couldn't figure out the mute button.
I'll get to McVay later.
Okay. God, I hate our rival coaches in this division so much. My sports hate is huge for them.
I hate the rival coaches, but unfortunately, I feel like I'm starting to build some respect for the 49ers as an organization, which I don't really care for.
It's because they hired John Lynch. I told you when they hired John Lynch.
I know you told me, and I didn't want to believe you. And now I feel like they're making good, savvy moves. And
yeah, everybody made fun of them when they hired Lynch as GM. And I was like, that's dangerous.
Yeah, it's like he knows stuff.
Yeah, because he's a smart guy and he's a good dude.
Another good dude, Corey, sent us a message, says, thanks for keeping up the solid content in the midst of everything, Brandon. After this year's draft, I felt like I wrote a bad NCAA tournament prediction. After all the mock drafts and studying I did, it just reminds me that no matter how much we play GM, John and Pete love their guys and invest in them. If there's one thing Brooks, Taylor, and Lewis bring, it's attitude and passion, and you can never have enough of that. That being said, I felt like we drafted wants over needs this year. Personally, I felt like we needed an heir to Dwayne Brown and another outside and nickel corner as well. But let's see how the rest of the free agency period plays out. I'd like to just get Everson Griffin and Snacks Harrison to finish out. Thanks again. Go Hawks.
Yeah, man, I can understand why Corey would feel that this was a want draft, but let's think about some of those things that he was talking about, like one, a nickel corner, right? Well, I mean, they drafted their nickel corner this year. His name's Quentin Dunbar, or at least Quentin Dunbar goes outside and Amadi's competing with Flowers, or however it is you want to look at it. They brought in that extra corner,
right,
in Quentin Dunbar before the draft. So there's that guy, right? As far as replacing Brown. You know, if you're looking to draft franchise type left tackles, you don't do it past pick number 10.
No, that's kind of where they're locked in. Now, if you're the 49ers and you luck into the fact that Trent Williams, you're able to give up a third and a fifth for him and manage
to
keep
the corpse of Trent Williams.
Well, we don't know that.
Yes, we do.
But when Joe Staley's retiring and they're able to keep that quiet until the actual trade is made, I mean, that's some next level stuff.
Is it? I heard this crap on talk radio too.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, look at the savvy 49ers. They actually got Joe Staley.
They got Joe Staley to
be quiet for a whole extra day. Wow. What next level thinking to be sure that the Redskins didn't know that they were in dire need for a tackle. Do you think when the Niners call the Redskins and go, hey, we're interested in Trent Williams, the Redskins don't go, oh,
they must
be done with Staley. Yeah, that didn't occur to them. Like, that was such next level trickery that somehow that they would never know that. Give me a
catfish
break.
Now,
it was basic.
I agree that there were some talk radio stations that built it up more than it was. I'm just saying that the fact that Joe Staley retiring wasn't out going into the draft is those things you generally hear about from bad organizations. And how many times in the past did you hear about news leaking out of the San Francisco front office? It was all the time. And so now I feel like they have a culture there where maybe the players care a little bit more about the organization than they did in the past. And that bums me out too.
Okay. So at the end of the day, we're going to pat the Niners big time on the back for being competent. Neat.
I want all
congratulations on not being the Bengals.
I want all incompetent teams in the NFC West. I want a cakewalk to the playoffs every single year. That's just what I want. Let me have this.
All right. Well, then you should be promoting for realignment and get us into the AFC East then.
I wish. Apparently Belichick has that locked up.
Yeah. We didn't take a quarterback. That was sort of interesting.
You know, every year, though, we get into why guys that we thought Seattle should consider and didn't get taken. And for me, it was, yeah, it was offensive line. I would have liked to see them get a developmental guy, maybe at the end of round one, early round two. And maybe there weren't those guys that they saw in those positions, or they had them rated lower down. But I mean, if we're looking that, if we're looking at the draft and getting fired up that they didn't take the guys that we had imagined for the team in those top 100, we have to realize that only 3 to 5 guys at the most are going to go in the top 100. And so for you to pick the 3 players that Seattle's going to take who are ranked in the top 100 and actually take them, that's, the chances are pretty low. Like 3 out of 100, I can do the math on that. That's 3%.
Right. And even if you get a real predictable GM, like say anybody from the Bengals, right? Then yeah, you know, they always play it safe and you know that they're going to go with the big name and, you know, all that stuff, right? That's what they always do. So maybe you raise that from 3% to 27%. But even then, it's kind of a crapshoot. And that's why mock drafts are freaking stupid. And when I see a, quote, too early mock draft for next year already, why'd you even do it if you knew in the title it was too damn early?
You know, it's funny. John Schneider, in one of his press conferences, talked about how mock drafts really don't matter. He didn't use the word stupid, but I think he could have. And I think he has a point, too, because even if you look at NFL.com, the way that they do their rankings, they have about 15 or 16 guys who they see as players who can come in and be NFL talent right away. Like there's that many guys where you look at and you just know that they have the talent and ability to come in. And yeah, maybe they end up being a bust because they don't have the work ethic. You can't really measure that going into the draft. And there's busts all the time in the top 15.
But 15 guys who have the physical traits where you'd say they could be day one contributors. And then out of those, maybe 8 to 10 are a success, right?
Right. And so you're that way every year. And that's what John Schneider was pointing out, is that every single year after about the first 15 picks, you don't really know what's going to happen because the next group of guys, like I said, NFL.com, you go there and look at the grades that they give them. And it's everything from a boom or bust type prospect to a guy who's, you know, has some quality upside potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like 100 players in that range of how they grade out. And the difference in the grading is not all that different. So if a team takes a guy toward the bottom end of that 100 versus the top end, I'm just saying that there's not a whole lot of difference in how they scout those players can make up those 1 or 2 points of their draft grade.
Of their value, right, on the
right,
board?
The draft value. That's what we hear that every single year, that, oh, yeah, the Seahawks didn't get enough value out of their picks.
I don't know. Did they get their damn guys? Like, that's all I care about.
Yeah.
The idea of this isn't 1992 anymore. Like, yeah, Jimmy Johnson reinventing the board and having, you know, the formula for what picks are worth what and pulling off the Herschel Walker heist, you know, that's 30 years ago, people. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Okay, that's fine. It's a new era when it comes to the draft. And I could care less about, you know, where they got a guy. Did you get the guy that you wanted? Like, that's the number one thing. And, you know, you speaking about the grades, I mean, just look at Jordan Brooks, a great example of this, right? Almost every other report that you read was guy couldn't, you know, cover anything. Like, he's the biggest liability in coverage that you could absolutely ever have in the linebacker position. And then you see Sam Gold's breakdown of what he did in Texas Tech earlier on in his career before his coaching change his senior year. And he actually was pretty decent in coverage in a lot of aspects.
You mean all Sam had to do was go back and watch tape from the year before rather than 2019? I wonder if any other NFL teams thought about doing that.
Apparently not.
Or draft analysts. I bet the teams did.
So you got to kind of sit and wonder, like, okay, How much of these draft experts' opinions do you really value? And that's a hard thing to know. Like, how much of it to take as a serious evaluation, and how much of it to take of, holy crap, they had to go through 400 players and they wrote up Jordan Brooks' second half of his evaluation three beers in, with his wife nagging him about how he, you know, never spends enough time with the kids. And you know what I'm saying? And like,
that's
just
oddly
puts
specific.
Just sits and types in random draft speak off of watching, you know, a half of a game. And I think that happens more often than not.
Oh, I'm sure.
With a lot of these guys. So that's why I don't get too caught up in the draft hype beforehand as far as who's good, who's not good, and like, let's figure it all out. I kind of wait till guys get drafted by our team, take a look at them, try to make my own opinion, and go from there. Like, everybody, oh, yeah, Daryl Taylor, that was a steal. Okay, cool. Like, I'm excited when I go turn it on. Then I turn it on and go, ah. Is it?
Yeah.
I would much rather do that than just read these draft reports, take it as the gospel, and never look at things with your own eyes.
Hey, if you have the time to go through all the players and decide who's good and not good, then I can definitely. Yeah, I see the value in that. I like having guys like Rob Staton and EJ Snyder on to talk about what they think of particular guys, because that's what they're doing. And yep. and they have that
interest in the time, and that's great for them.
Yeah. the draft grades, though, Dave Bloomquist points out, even though I was not super happy with a couple picks, I always find draft grades laughable. You can only get a high grade if, one, you pick high, two, you make a lot of picks, three, you pick 1 to 2 fantasy football friendly players, and four, you pick guys that the writers have projected to you.
There it is.
That is the key to getting a good draft grade.
It's funny how many people gave the Vikings this amazing draft grade, right? It's because they had like a zillion picks from like round 5 on.
Yeah.
And it's somebody, I don't remember who it was, that had made the point, one of the talking head guys. And he's just like, how many of those are going to hit? Maybe one?
Yeah.
John
Schneider
zero?
Said, well, maybe they won't have to do, you know, UDFA. They won't have to spend their time doing UDFA calls.
Yeah, exactly. So. Because they don't need to bring any in because they made so many draft picks. But how many of those guys are actually going to hit? You give them an A? What, just because they made a bunch of picks?
That's what I mean. You have to have a lot of picks to get a high grade. Hey, one area that the Seahawks did grade out well, PFF said the Seahawks got the second best undrafted free agent, signing quarterback Anthony Gordon from Washington State.
Okay. Am I supposed to care?
We got a high grade in one spot. That makes up for the F that we got from Roto World.
Yeah, I saw that they had signed Anthony Gordon as somebody who will ride the pine, and that's neat. He's not Russell Wilson, so why do I care? I'm going to see, you know, 19 games of Russell Wilson. I don't need, you know, I'm going to see 19, 20 games of Russell Wilson. I don't care about Anthony Gordon.
He ranks right up there with every other backup quarterback in Seattle.
That's exactly right. Well, every third stringer.
Third string.
Yeah.
Because everybody knows. Healthy Russell Wilson, injured Russell Wilson, third string QB.
Right.
Just so we're clear.
Exactly. That is the depth chart.
For all the new listeners who are tuning in for some post-draft
QB1,
coverages.
Healthy Russ. QB 2, dinged up Russ. QB 3, doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's when you start rooting for a high draft pick.
Hey, at least it's a short drive for Gordon from Pullman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be a little less windy in Seattle. It'll be nice for his deal.
He's going to be throwing the football a little bit less in the Seahawks offense. Not just being a backup quarterback. I mean, it's a little bit different offense.
It's true. I had made some joke about, let me know when Mike Leach isn't the coach of WSU. And one of our listeners was kind enough to write in. And apparently he was let go this offseason for making some off color joke, which I don't know if you're going to hire Mike Leach, you better be prepared to let some off color jokes roll off your back. Cause that's just who he is.
I think they probably did that for years.
Okay. Just one too many.
You think he made it that entire time and that was his first off-color joke?
I have no idea. That's how much time I take focusing on WSU in Pullman, Washington.
Yeah. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll welcome some new members of the flock and get into some Do Better and Better Life.
All right, man.
Getting into the second half of the show, a couple of news items that we skipped over. It was interesting. We heard that going into the draft that the Seahawks were interested in a possible trade for Leonard Fournette from the Jaguars. And I suppose that could still be in play.
Yeah, it definitely could. Maybe that's why they're clearing the decks in cap room by getting rid of Britt and Fluker. I would guess that if they were going to pull a trade and use that cap room, I would guess that's more on Ngakoue than Fournette.
Yeah, but Fournette doesn't. I think his cap space is $4 million for next year. So
with the drafting of Dallas, right? Like you've got four dudes now for the backfield in Penny, Carson, Dallas, and Homer.
Yeah.
I don't see them going after Fournette now, which I kind of liked a little bit ago, but maybe not.
I could still see them making a move. I don't see Homer as a guy that you have to go into the season with. If he gets cut for somebody who's better, that's, and your team's better,
I guess.
And but, who knows, Penny could start the season on the PUP with his ACL injury, so.
Oh, I sincerely doubt it.
He could.
Yeah.
You can doubt it all you want, but it's possible.
Yeah, well, the CL recoveries are way faster now.
Sure.
Just all I want Penny to be is Adrian Peterson. Is that too much to ask?
No, I feel like that's just an appropriate projection for a first-round pick.
I want him to heal like Adrian Peterson. I want him to run like Adrian Peterson. I want him to do everything like Adrian Peterson except for hit his kids.
I think we can ask that for just any parent of kids.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Don't hit your kids with the switch anymore. It's frowned upon.
It does remind me, though. I one time at my daughter's grade school, I walked in one day and it was wear jersey to work day.
Yeah.
And the person who was making that was right there as the kids were coming in. Had on her Adrian Peterson Vikings jersey. And this was not too long after Peterson was in trouble for this. And it was a little disturbing to me that the first person walking through the door at school was wearing an Adrian Peterson jersey.
It's bad optics at the very least.
It is. Yeah. I feel like if you're a person who works at a school, like maybe you just retire that jersey for a little while.
You go with somebody else?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kirk Cousins. Like... Everson Griffin.
There you go. Because otherwise you'd have to wear a Cousins jersey.
Yeah, that seems a little gross.
Yeah.
Bring back your Brett Favre jersey. It's fine.
There you go.
All he did was enormous amounts of painkillers. And, you know, kids know about that stuff.
Plus, although if they do have the Favre jersey on and the painkillers and everything, the pills, do you worry that they're just going to like Benadryl the shit? Your kids and like, so they take a nap, they have a nice cushy afternoon.
I guess I wasn't concerned so much for the switching at kids at school either. I
no.
Other news for the Seahawks: Joey Hunt, David Moore signed the restricted free agent tenders. Here's an interesting news item: Percy Harvin wants to return to the NFL.
Good luck with that.
Yeah,
who's taking a flyer on Percy Harvin?
Watch him go to San Francisco and be good.
Nope.
Yeah, they won't take a flyer on him. Yeah. If I had to pick a team in the NFC West that would actually pick him up, who do you think is more likely between the Rams and the Cardinals?
The Rams.
Yeah?
Yeah. They just got rid of Cooks. They're kind of depleted, you know, as far as weapons. He wouldn't cost you anything.
No.
Sean McVay, I'm sure, thinks he can handle Percy Harvin.
I feel like he'd fit better in the Cardinals offense, though.
I don't think he fits in any offense anymore.
No.
So how broke is Percy Harvin?
Yeah. That was sad. That was where my first thought went too.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully he's just developed a love for the sport, like he misses it.
Yeah. No, that would be great. I do not wish for him to be broke, but.
But usually guys who have been out of the NFL for a while and made significant money. Yeah. You do concern yourself with that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's bring things up a little bit. Let's get John the Bar Davidson in here.
Oh, okay. It's been a minute. I figured we'd hear from him after the draft here.
You know we're hearing from John after the draft.
Yeah.
Says, hi, you two, and I hope you are keeping well and safe. I sat through the whole weekend and waited and waited and waited. I don't know if it's with being cooped up at the moment or I was hoping for the best. I'm usually upbeat and optimistic about the Hawks, but I can describe the draft and free agency in one word. Underwhelming. Every year I feel like we have a shot at the big one. But as I send this on a Tuesday night at 8 p.m., I don't feel we have one this year. I'm saying this because after cutting Fluker and Britt, we may have something up our sleeves. I really hope so. I don't have a great deal of knowledge about the college scheme, but the passing over of Queen to get a linebacker no one seems to rate as either a stroke of genius or a bad choice. Only time will tell, I guess. This is Negative Nancy signing out, but still hoping for Griffin and Clowney. Go Hawks! From John.
Go Hawks, John. Yeah, it's a typical John Schneider draft where everybody kind of scratches their head and they go, who?
I hope this works out.
Yeah, and I think at this point we can all agree that more often than not, it has. I hated the Penny pick more than the Brooks pick. Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah, yeah, you really did hate the Penny pick. But I thought you were in on the Jonathan Taylor idea. Or one, oh no, Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah.
You wanted that dude.
And he goes, what, three picks after Brooks?
To the Chiefs.
Great fit.
Yeah, four picks after Brooks at five picks, right? 32.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Chiefs get the first running back off the board drafting with the last pick in the first round.
Yeah. I wouldn't be upset if I were a Chiefs fan about that.
Well, and the thing about the Chiefs, too, I think I've heard that they're bringing back 20 of 22 of their starting players from their Super Bowl year.
Yeah, it might be more like 19 after Breland just got busted.
Oh, yeah.
He even had an interception in the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Just don't go driving around with an open container and some weed in your car.
That seems like a bad idea.
You'll be better off for it.
Yeah.
Oh, and have a driver's license if you do try to do it.
I don't know. At that point, really, is the driver's license not having that the worst of your problems?
It might be. Yeah. Because he had less than, you know, he didn't have much for weed. It was just like, you know, just a tiny bit. Whatever.
Yeah.
All right. So then they had a drink open in the car. Don't drink and drive. That's stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe the passenger was having a beer.
You never know, right? Was there a passenger in the car?
I will say that in Montana, especially on like, you know, float days, like if you're got the raft out and everybody's going to go and float the river, uh-huh. right? And you have like three, four people on your raft, like whoever's driving is not drinking, right? But everybody's about ready to go and hang out on the river. There might be a couple people in the car having a beer.
There might be. It's not unusual in Montana.
That is not unusual in Montana. I'm just trying to maybe give Breland the, you know, benefit of the doubt.
Maybe it was a float day and he had a load of people in his car.
Yeah. Somebody else was powdering a beer.
And if that's the case, the person with the driver's license should have been driving.
That would have been smarter.
Because then, you know what? Then you have the built-in excuse of being like, okay, well, I guess I have to drink on the way to the float trip because I forgot my driver's license at home.
Yeah, I mean, clearly I can't drive.
You're like the guy who doesn't bring your credit card to the restaurant. It was like, oh, I get this, but oh, I left my wallet in the car. Sorry.
You're the opposite of the designated driver. You're the designated drinker at that point.
Right. Whatever it was, Breland screwed up on this.
Yeah. Oops.
That guy needs to do better.
Yeah, he does.
Some people who don't need to do better, they're doing just fine. They're helping support the show. Welcome to the flock. To a number of folks this week, we'll start off with a guy who's already been welcomed as a member of the flock, but mm-hmm. came in with a donation. Steve came in via Zelle with a $50 donation. So thanks to Steve and an ITM to Steve as well. He knows what that means.
All right, cool. I appreciate it a lot. I'm not on the inside club here. So apparently happy ITM to you and stuff, whatever. Fine.
You've listened to the show. It's in the morning. You've listened like once or twice. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I know which show you're talking about. Adam Curry. Adam Curry and the other dude who's in California.
Yeah, that show.
Yeah, that show. God, why am I...
No Agenda.
Blanking on the name of it. There it is.
Yeah, Steve knows that show.
No, well, Steve knows all the good shows, it sounds like.
Taylor Shea, welcome to the flock in at 12:12. So Taylor coming
nice.
In. I don't think we've seen Taylor in the Facebook group yet, though. So come on in.
No. Yeah. Hurry up, Taylor. Jesus.
Jesse Aney came in at 12:12. Also dropped us another $144 donations. I forget if I'm overpaying you guys, but I don't care because you guys are the best. Finger guns.
Double finger guns, and I think you hit it just right. You're definitely not overpaying. Never, ever, ever. just keep writing them checks.
He's caught up now, though. Jesse's caught up from all the years from listening back all the way to the first season. So,
holy crap, really?
Yeah. He's been coming through with like the 144 donations for the periods of times that he missed over the years. So
there we go. I like the retroactive makeup for being a freeloader.
Yeah.
Being a retroactive freeloader, not being a retroactive freeloader. That's what it would be, right?
Exactly. One of the two.
Yeah.
It's a lot of
pick one.
Too many qualifiers in there for me to follow.
But. I don't know. You start dealing with space time and like it just all gets, you know, convoluted.
Thomas T is in at $3. Welcome to the flock to Thomas.
Welcome, man. Hopefully we'll have a season so we can do pick'ems, and you'll be in that Patreon only pick'em link.
Absolutely. We also have some people to thank for some raises over this past week. Jose Miguel Quintero came in at up to 12:12, and we talked to Jose as part of our live stream.
We did. That was really enjoyable. I wish my internet had been less stupid that day, and I could have spoken with him more.
But. Yeah, you had internet struggles that day for sure. Maybe it was because your computer wasn't plugged all the way in.
Does that have anything to do with the internet connection?
I mean, power's important for the computer.
I guess.
The internet dropped out as soon as your cord got unplugged when I was talking to you earlier.
Yeah, well, that's because I was moving stuff. That we all know that you don't move anything, you don't change anything, and then everything works. Don't update anything.
Ivy Nelson Groves gave us a raise up to 12:12. Ivy was a helpful part of our conversation on the live stream as well.
I would like to think of her as more of like a draft guide in the sense of like keeping us all.
Yeah, she and Amy were just on it when it came to picks. And yeah, if you want all 4.5 hours of Adam and Clinton and I, it's up at gettingtheflock.com. And we did a good 4.5 hours of the first round. And there's no draft analysis as part of that, but you get our commentary throughout the first round.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, that was rough for me. Out of everything when it comes to the NFL, the weakest part of my knowledge is college players coming in.
Sure. Yeah. No, it was just a fun hangout. That's all that was supposed to be. So you didn't do anything wrong.
Are we sure?
You showed up.
This was, okay.
As part of a hangout, you show up, and that's how the whole part of it.
Okay. Well, I made it, so that's good.
You were there.
Yeah, I would like to know Ivy's opinion on Swain, because she's the big Florida fan.
Yeah,
right?
She was the Florida fan.
Yeah.
She was not real high on any of the defensive players, so we didn't really talk too much offense.
Well, no, because we only did the first round with everybody. And Swain was a sixth round.
That's true. You know what the hangout might be fun for is if there's another when they're replaying a game.
Oh, that might be the way to go. Yeah. I wonder if there's a way to get it so that we're all more or less synced up, you know, within a second or so.
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
because that was one of the hardest parts about the draft is that Clinton and I were behind you and then, you know, all that stuff. Right.
Yeah. I wonder if it's just a private feed for just our members of the flock, if we could actually stream a game within the StreamYard so that everybody's seeing what we're seeing at the same time. I don't know.
That'd be cool.
Something to play with.
Yeah.
Also, a raise from Full Calf Metcalf up to 12:12.
All right. You got a fan of copyright infringement giving us giving us a raise.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me.
Is that your brother?
No, I don't think so. If it were my brother, I think he would come in at the minimum amount because why would he need to give me a raise?
Right. That's a good point.
Or he could just like PayPal me a few bucks if I need it.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
I don't know.
I just thought maybe it was, you know, trying to make up for, you know, childhood or whatever.
That wouldn't be enough.
Okay.
Some listener feedback last show, we talked about Skyborg. The
Yeah.
Jonathan Stein came in and his combo bad guy would be Blobocop.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I don't think Robocop was the actual villain, though. It was Clarence Boddicker.
No, but he was at times morally ambiguous, Robocop.
Yeah.
Because he was now, you know, cyborg and stuff.
And imagine a morally ambiguous blob with weapons like Robocop.
Right.
Scary. Yeah.
What, isn't that technically just T2?
Oh, yeah. It's already been done.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Which is, yes, terrifying.
See, the villain I came up with, it was Hannibal 9000.
Okay. I got the Hannibal part.
Yeah, and HAL 9000 from 2000.
I thought it was HAL. From I thought it was HAL 2000. I didn't know it was HAL 9.
Yeah, and you could say...
I just knew him as HAL, to be honest.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. I'm sorry. I do wish we could chat longer, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that because I'm having an old friend for dinner.
There you go. Yeah.
Freddy Gruber. Imagine if Bruce Willis had to face off against Hans Gruber with Freddy Krueger claws.
Okay. Not bad. Not bad.
Sam Sullivan comes in with Predavator.
I think that was my favorite one.
Yeah. What if in Jedi, Darth Vader had taken off the mask to expose a Predator face underneath?
How terrifying
would that be?
You know what would be more terrifying? If Darth Vader could do, like, the camouflage like the Predator does. Yeah. Hmm. Where you just, like, become the background.
Mm-hmm.
And you disappear. And all of a sudden, just a lightsaber, like, you know, comes out of nowhere and just cuts you in half.
Either one gives me nightmares.
But he still couldn't hide the breath, though. That would be the problem, right? He'd be all invisible, but all you just hear...
Well, didn't Predator have kind of a noise that, like, a kind of a clicky noise that he made?
There's
too?
A little, there was a pearly purr type growl thing.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, that was impressive. Okay. I'm a little afraid now. I remember watching Predator with my good buddy, and I must have been like 7 or 8. And I did an overnight at his house, and we slept out on his deck. It was in the summer.
Oh, no.
And he lived, like, in a pretty wooded area. And, like, all night, I kept, like, looking down at my sleeping bag real fast to see if there's, like, 3 red dots anywhere. Like, I was freaked, man.
That's not a good movie to watch as a kid. I watched Nightmare on Elm Street 3 as a kid, and that also not a good movie for sleepovers.
I avoided all those as a kid.
Yeah.
Even as an adult. I don't like horror. I'm not into it.
Well, Floctimus Prime comes in with just enough nightmare fuel, combining Freddy Krueger and Pennywise into Krugerwise.
That's no good. That's no good.
And it's...
What's more terrifying, a clown mask or a Krueger mask?
Same?
Yeah, so I think that's a net neutral at that point, right?
Keith says that he came up with Krugerwise because he couldn't come up with how to combine the earworm from Wrath of Khan and the boat ride from Willy Wonka.
Fair. Yeah. Yeah, the earworm in Wrath of Khan, that's one of those more torturous things to watch, that's for sure.
Can I tell you, I have never rewatched that movie because of that scene, because my dad had me watch that when
really?
I was young, and I have never watched Wrath of Khan again.
Oh, yeah. No wonder you like the whale one the best.
That part scarred me for life.
I guess so.
So, yeah, I like the whale one the best. And then the remake, they didn't have the earworm as part of that one.
No, not in the reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because they weren't stranded on that world yet.
It was totally different.
Well, no, it's like before that happened. It gave you an insight into why Kirk and Khan had the relationship that they did.
See, I need to go back and watch the actual second one now. Then I would understand it, right?
Yeah, basically, like, Kirk strands Khan on the planet that he ends up on, And that's where the earworms come from, is that planet.
Mm. Moving on.
There you go. It's still the off season.
Jason Rundle comes in through the email, GoHawks@SeahawkersPodcast.com, says, can we please sign Cam Newton to the Seahawks as a running back? Then we can go back and do some mad trick plays with two blokes that can throw the football.
If I didn't have to deal with his attitude in the clothes, oh, and the font that he uses on all of his social, then yes.
Let's
yes,
be
we
fair.
Could have Cam.
Let's be fair. You don't have to deal with that third one.
No, I don't. But it does pop up. And if he was a member of the Seahawks, then it would happen.
You don't want it. You're out?
No, I'm out. He's going to be...
The Vegas favorite is the Patriots right now.
Is it? Okay, because I've been saying Patriots for a while.
Yeah. Steelers could make some sense, too. Ben's always hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about Jameis with
New Orleans?
Saints?
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah, that was a backwards move for the Saints for backup quarterback.
Rather than Teddy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been telling people that I think Teddy might be the best quarterback in that division right now.
No, I think with those weapons, I think Tom will be
the
best.
You think it's still Tom? Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Put Teddy on the Tampa Bay Bucs.
Oh, yeah. Teddy would be great. I mean, you got to take into account their situations, right?
Yeah.
Are you excited about, you think Gronk coming back is a big deal?
It's kind of fun. I like Gronk.
I like Gronk. It's fun. This is a guy that only scored 3 touchdowns his last year in the NFL. He then took a year off. He lost 20 pounds. And now he's got to come back and do it. No, I don't see him as being a big
weapon. He'll have an impact.
Weapon.
But.
Well, if you're it, sure, but why are you getting rid of O.J. Howard if you're the Bucs?
Have they gotten rid of him?
Well, there's all the articles about him on the trading block.
Right? Yeah. Well, he was supposed to be on the trading block in the middle of the season last year.
I know. What are you doing?
Yeah,
keep Gronk, Howard, if you're going all in on Brady, then go all in.
I think you bring some familiar face for him to hang out with and have, so it's fun for him.
Yeah. So when does Edelman get traded?
Yeah. Maybe Edelman and Brady aren't all that great with buds. Or that would have happened by
BS.
Now.
BS. Edelman and Brady hang out in Montana together.
Okay.
That happens. Yeah.
Well, then how come they haven't made that work yet?
I don't know. Maybe because of contracts?
There was a contract. They traded a 4th round pick to get Gronk.
For a retired, busted up Gronk who's had like 7 surgeries and 20 concussions? Sounds about right to me.
And the Raiders and Seahawks swapped 5th and 6th round picks for Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah.
So it was hardly even giving anything up. It was like we got a little bit better draft pick.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't even get an extra pick.
Yeah, so Patriots got a steal there, really.
Yeah. Surprise. Oh, yeah, it was Troy that came in through Facebook. Said Mike Leach isn't at WSU anymore. And he actually, that time actually came months ago. He's at Mississippi State, pissing people off before the season already.
All right. That feels about right. I appreciate Troy on the Mike Leach whereabouts update.
Also, thanks to some people who came in with reviews over these last couple of weeks. BJ Pester in says, let's go. This is such a good podcast. The Seahawks should draft J.K. Dobbins because of the injuries of Carson and Penny. You guys helped me through the tough times. Go Hawks and catfish the 49ers.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about the 49ers. Well, obviously the Dobbins things didn't happen.
Yeah, that didn't work out. He went to the Ravens.
But he got a different running back with a D name, Dallas.
It's practically the same.
Practically the same.
Bandicoot 1913 comes in, says, great show. Brandon and Adam are hilarious. Great info. And talk about my team. Go Hawks.
Hey, man. I appreciate that. Now, is Bandicoot a real thing or is that just a video game like thing? Isn't Crash Bandicoot a video game character?
Do you think there's an actual critter out there called a Bandicoot?
I think there's a 50-50 shot.
I want to know what you think.
I think there is, or it's a mythical beast, much like a Sam Squanch.
I feel like you're trying to have the best of both worlds here.
Well, yeah.
Real or not real, Adam? Answer the question.
Oh, not real.
Bandicoots are a group of about 20 species of small to large-sized terrestrial marsupial omnivores in the order of Paramelliomorphia.
Oh, well, there you go. All right, so they're definitely real.
They're Australian and versions. New Guinea-type mice.
I thought they were marsupials.
Yeah. They look mice-ish.
Oh, yeah, I guess that would be in that. I guess when I think marsupial, I think, like, kangaroo.
Yeah. So there you go. Real.
All right. Beware the bandicoot.
I don't know. It's, I don't know if you have to worry about it.
They're ferocious.
JLo223 Money comes in, says, great guests, great podcast, combines professional production with fascinating guests, especially love hearing from Rob Staten this time of year. Keep up the good work.
Hey, appreciate it, man. Yeah, we'll have Rob in all the time because that means I get to check out and that works for my deal.
Just means
and
Adam's like up at the cabin.
Yeah, exactly. Which yeah. My better life almost was Elon this week, is surprised, but he says that the Starlink satellite thing is going to be, you know, beta testing here in about 6 months, like public beta testing.
Oh, you're going to get on board.
I want to get in on that. Yeah, because if I can get on the Starlink, and he says for everybody in northern North America, right?
Yeah.
By the end of the year, that means I can podcast from the cabin.
Ooh. Then we're guaranteed week-to-week shows.
It's more guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
It's guaranteed-ish. Guaranteed-y.
On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. My do better this week is for a phenomenon that has been occurring for a few years now. And as a former journalism major, as you know, you are too, Brandon, it's a trend in the way the articles are written that is driving me
catfish
crazy.
Hmm.
And you pick an article. I mean, it doesn't even matter what it is. I'm just going to open up the news app here real quick. And I'm going to read about the fifth headline, right? Well, no, that one's political. We're not going to do that. all right. So here we go. This just happens to be one here. Tesla surprises Wall Street with first quarter profit. That's the headline, right?
Okay.
I can guarantee you, if I clicked on that article, much like every other freaking article I read these days, it would take me five catfishing paragraphs to get to the point of if they made money in the first quarter or not. Uh-huh. Like, that's how long it would take. The inverse pyramid of writing style where you get to the catfish point has all but disappeared in the age of the internet. And I don't know why. Maybe it's just because it's not a newspaper anymore, so you're not constricted by freaking, you know, space anymore. But these writers think that we want to listen to their flowery prose for five
catfish
paragraphs before you get to the freaking point. I got catfish to do. Write the article, get to the point, get the
catfish
out, and do better.
Adam coming with the inverted pyramid heat this week.
It drives me insane. If I have to read more than two paragraphs to get to the meat of the article, yeah. I'm seething every time.
I like the ones now where you go to the website and they have like the TLDR version right up top with bullet points.
Yeah, and then that's lazy too. Like, I mean, I get the bullet point thing. It's basically the print journalism version of the 30-second soundbite, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Boo. All right. You don't get any context. Now, I don't need five paragraphs to set up the context of something, right? Give me like a paragraph with a little bit of context.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the point and then provide me with even more context after that if I choose to go any further.
Yeah.
But this writing style where like everything is literally the front page Sunday feature from your local newspaper type style, where it's five pages of just fluff. I'm sick and tired of it.
The thing that bothers me, and I thought you might be going with that particular headline, is the editorializing within headlines. Like if you were to click on that article and find out that there wasn't an expert saying that they were surprised about whatever the situation was, and they went ahead and put that in the headline, there's a lot of that going on too.
There's a ton of that. Like, there's so many misleading headlines, and you click on it thinking, like, I'm trying to think of an example, you know, something of, well, so-and-so said this, right? And you click on the article, and it's like, yes, technically they said that, but if you
put it in context,
the whole thing, like, come on. Like, it's just, you're being clickbaity.
Too much clickbait.
They just, it's the clickbait, and then they bury the lead, and just what, to keep your eyeballs on the page longer?
You know, that's one of my favorite things about having a subscription to The Athletic, is that you don't have to worry about clickbait, you don't have to worry about pop-ups. That website for sports stuff is top-notch.
Yes. Yeah, I'm with you on
I don't know where I go for that for regular news, though.
I have yet to find it.
If there's an Athletic for regular news, yeah, I would like to know.
Just the straight spit.
Yeah.
You know, quick and to the point.
Factual.
That's all I need. Factual. Exactly. Yeah. And don't look at things through the prism of left or right. Right. Like, maybe look at it through the prism of up or down. If the logic reasons it up and it makes more sense, then that's something I'm going to go with.
Give me the facts and let me work it out.
Yeah. If the logic and reason brings your point down, then that's the way I'm going to go. But yeah.
What might do better this week is for an NFC West rival, Sean McVay. After he learned about the Trent Williams trade, Sean McVay was asked about how he felt about the situation, knowing that the 49ers, Joe Staley's going off in retirement, but here's the 49ers. They have his backup immediately, and it's a potential Hall of Fame talent in Trent Williams. He's a multi-time Pro Bowler, multi-time All-Pro. And so the quote that we got from Sean McVay is that he saw that trade and he said, I'm going to go need to drink a couple of more beers. Thanks for reminding me. So Sean McVay's immediate reaction to a trade within an NFC West rival, it wasn't that, oh, here, I need to go and I need to get to work and get better. No, frat boy McVay is going to pound beers instead. Hey, Sean McVay, how about instead of slamming beers after your team in your division improves, you dial in on making your team better? You want to hear a coach who's up for a challenge, Sean? Listen to Pete Carroll. He gets fired up about going against a higher level of competition and wants to hit somebody in the mouth. Instead, you want to hit the mini fridge. Sean McVay, do better.
So what I get out of this is that John Lynch makes Shawnee want to drink.
Make Shawnee want to drink. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I maybe it was said in humor, but
No, he was dead serious that he was going to go get hammered and probably turn his retirement papers in.
He was going to go get hammered and put some more hair gel in.
Yeah.
That's what I got.
Get that spiked up.
Maybe go do some fist pumping. When I see the manscaping commercials,
you think
I imagine that they're targeting Sean McVay with those ads.
There's some podcasts that I listen to that have different kinds of scaping going on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I like those kind of podcast ads. Could you imagine if we had to do ads like that about trimming up?
A little bit, because we've tried. And thanks to all of the little flockers that save us from having to do that. That makes life a lot better.
Yeah. Well, we had the hair loss stuff. I guess we had... Yeah. Had the one ED ad that we did, and then they said, don't do that anymore.
I didn't even think we were bad at it, but whatever.
I know. I thought we worked it in with the whole breakfast aspect. We were being creative.
Yep. Nope.
No.
Nope.
Creativity.
Yeah.
That's what
whatever.
I don't think we even finished off that whole ad campaign. I think they bailed out before the contracted end period.
I don't think anybody was sad about that.
And then I think we said,
it's like getting an annulment rather than waiting to get in a divorce, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was our last ad campaign.
I think we're like,
let's not do that again.
It's better for everybody's deal.
Yeah.
All right. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week, Brandon, is for Justin Britt, the man in the pivot, the guy with a low SAW score, the man who held it down in the middle for us for season after season. Well, having a rocky start to his career, found his rightful place at center, brought some stability, a guy that Russell Wilson obviously felt a lot of kinship with and had a lot of respect for. If you saw Russ's post regarding Britt's retirement, it was, or not retirement, but his release, you kind of get a sense of how much he means to a few of the players on the team. And I thought Russ actually gave him his due where the team really didn't. That was something that was very frustrating. I mean, little DJ Fluker tributes and things like that, right? How many of those did you get for Britt?
They put out a YouTube video for Justin Britt.
One.
Yeah, it was just one.
Man, I don't know. I just, Fluker got a lot of play and Britt was just kind of like, okay, bye. And for a guy who had a bigger impact on the team than Fluker did. And I'm looking at his signature right now on one of those like pennant things, right? Yeah,
he was the last one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's gone now and that makes me sad. I kind of wanted to keep him, but that cap space helps bring in a couple edge defenders. I'm all for it. But for his time here with the Seahawks, his tough-nosed play, the leadership that he brought, and a dry butt, Justin Britt, better at life than Skip Bayless.
I am a little concerned about the saw factor if they have BJ Finney pegged as the new center. Maybe it's Ethan Posick.
Maybe.
We'll see.
BJ Finney's done more in this league than Posick has.
That's true. But that was a saw joke.
Yes. And what is saw again?
Swamp ass weight.
Yep. So yeah. if you were to take it,
because BJ Finney, capture, wasn't Roethlisberger saying that he had to shove a towel down Finney's pants to dry up?
Yes. So yeah, if you were to take like some sort of absorbent cloth, weigh it, you know,
before
dry
and after,
and then put it in your center's butt, or not in his butt, or on his butt, and then weigh it after, that is the weight that you're looking at. That gives you an idea of how much saw that a center produces.
And that's way different from sack.
It is. It's just short area quickness.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this move. I feel like having a low saw score is important, but whatever our quarterback can make it work with.
Yeah. Well, Russ can make it work with anybody. And I mean, we saw Joey Hunt come in and at least hold down the fort. He was a liability against the, you know, the bigger, stronger defensive tackles. So yeah, let's hope that they actually have a solid plan for this. And it does look like Posick or Finney.
Well, my better at life this week is for all of the team responsible for broadcasting the NFL draft. We watched 3 days and everything seemed to go pretty smoothly. We had our critiques as far as maybe not having the level of analysis that we've had in some previous years. But I think Todd McShay was down with the corona, so he couldn't make it onto the broadcast. He had to rest up. So that's understandable. They're missing that piece. And so they had some backup plans. We got to see some analysis. But the main thing was, is we got to see an NFL draft. And it happened because a lot of people around the scenes, you know, making this work, from general managers doing everything from their house. We had TV cameras in and all those places. We had so many TV cameras in on the players and got to see their celebrations throughout the draft. And for the NFL to pull this all together and make it happen, I'm giving it to them. Better at life than Skip Bayless.
Yeah, it's solid. And everybody's speaking about how great it was to have a sporting event and how much it helped kind of distract from, you know, Virageddon and all that crap, right? And I mean, to me, the biggest thing about pulling off the draft now on time is that's one more thing out of the way to getting back to starting the season on time.
Uh-huh.
And so just for that, having the draft out of the way, and now the team's doing, you know, the virtual rookie mini camps, right? Again, one more thing that they're doing to keep us on schedule so that if there is a way to make the NFL work at the beginning of the season, we will. And because I do not want to miss out on a season of Russell Wilson's prime.
No,
that would piss me off.
Well, and they're talking about finding ways, too, to make baseball available in the summer. So I feel like once the first sport gets kind of the ball rolling for the rest of the other sports, that's probably where we see it start. And baseball seems like the obvious choice to get things started because, I mean, everybody's apart from each other anyway.
Yeah, for the most part, they're social distance, right? Unless you're on base.
And you're throwing a ball and catching it in the glove. And so there's like no...
Wipe it down with a Clorox wipe like each time the pitcher throws it.
Yeah.
Wouldn't spitballs be like a problem then?
You probably don't want to do spitballs. I think that's illegal anyway.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that wouldn't really change much for MLB is that some of the other sports have talked about the idea of not playing in front of fans.
Yeah.
And that would just be a regular game or any baseball game. So.
Yeah. Pete Carroll was asked about what he thought about playing NFL games without fans.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, I played at University of the Pacific and we played in front of empty stadiums all the time.
Yeah.
It can be done.
People talk about it like it would be the worst thing that's ever happened. Like,
I mean,
it's not ideal.
It's not ideal for me.
Well, no, it's not ideal. But like at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
Who gives a rip? I'd much rather have football.
Well, you know, it was LeBron who was saying that he would rather not play than play a basketball game without fans.
Well, that's because he's a whiner.
You think LeBron's a whiner?
In comparison to Jordan, like that's one of the things after this, the Last Dance doc has come out. Like just the having grown up with Michael Jordan in my life, right? Like, and then all these young kids being like, well, LeBron's every bit as good as Jordan. Yeah, bullshit.
Catfish!
Like, one of these guys was a stone-cold killer, and the other guy is you know, LeBron.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love LeBron. Like, but he's no Jordan. He's just no Jordan.
Would you compare him more to Magic?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. See, Jordan wouldn't give a rip if there was, you know, one fan in the stand or 100,000. Doesn't care. Wants to tear your heart out. He just wants to win.
Yeah.
He got pissed. He got pissed because he thought Phil was cheating on the score in practice and left.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a different type of mentality.
Right. LeBron, I would rather not play if there was no fan. Stop being a crybaby.
Catfish!
Get ass and get out there and play.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.